Welcome back. As you can tell, B. Frank is back. I'm here. Have no fear. Missed my first and only episode.
You saved a sinking ship, Brian.
It was a great episode. For those who didn't listen, be sure to go check out last week's many laughs, specifically the sister Jean faking her own death. That was something I never expected to hear, but was all on for when I heard it.
The timing was set up perfectly for her to do it, and she was too selfish to follow through. So
it's a shame.
A mark against her.
It's a shame. Today is April 11th, in case you didn't know. Season 2, episode 41 of the Let Me Be Frank podcast. Brian and Pete obviously here with you. And Patrick Reed is Masters champion. He shot a final round 70? 71?
I think it was 71.
71. He missed by just two strokes, being the only player in the history of Augusta to shoot under 70 all four rounds. And that story probably still wouldn't have been the biggest of the day. Obviously, him winning was the biggest. But the final round we saw from Jordan Spieth was the single greatest in the history of Augusta. It was the greatest Sunday in Augusta. Yes, there was a 62 63s have been shot at Augusta, but I don't think you can put Spieth's round behind the other two, given the fact that he was coming back down nine strokes coming into the day and had a chance to cut. He had a chance to shoot a 62 and just a couple shots didn't go his way.
Yeah. And I really, really was rooting for him, and it sucked that Rory was just there while playing with Patrick Reed.
He was a bystander.
I wanted him to do it too. I mean, both Rory and Patrick Reed are assholes. Rory less so, yeah. But Rory's more of like the golf, like the Shooter McGavin golf purist. Like, this is golf, not a rock concert, with his comments about not drinking as much at the courses.
I think it's time we start talking about Rory not being a good golfer at Augusta. Like, that was his fourth try to win the career Grand Slam. He's been in it how many times, and he just collapses on Sundays every time. Augusta, people have talked about how the course gave up plenty of low scores, this week. Augusta beat Rory again. I mean, it's undefeated when it goes up against Rory.
Yeah, and I don't know what he can do about it, but yeah, I agree with you. There are like a lot of eagles, like a surprising amount of eagles this weekend.
Yeah. We had an amateur with two eagles.
Yeah, Doug Gim, I think, had two eagles in
Texas.
And then I forget who had two eagles in a row.
Oh, man, that was...
starts with a W.
Fuck, what was his name?
I don't know. Well,
we'll remember it later.
Congrats to that man who had two eagles in a row. But yeah, I mean, there were some low scores that people got. I was hoping Ricky Fowler would finally break through and win. But I think again, like he still looks ridiculous. The hat has improved his look because it's not as wide brim now, and his hair is not ridiculous anymore. But he needs to clean it up somehow.
So I have a few thoughts on Ricky. One, I don't know if there's a guy more deserving on the tour than him to win. Like he deserves it at this point. He plays so well. Everyone seems to love him. Like he's good friends with a lot of guys. It doesn't make sense that he can't just finally break through. And two, it really seemed like if Patrick Reed had somehow folded under the pressure and three putt on 18, that Ricky was going to dominate him in the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
He just seemed like he was getting stronger as it went on, and that if there was an extra hole or two for him, he would have been there.
Yeah, and you know, you got to feel for Ricky with having his incredibly hot girlfriend and
really tough life.
Yeah, sucks to go. I have to go home to that. But what was your opinion overall on Patrick Reed? I know, like it's been hashed over of his getting kicked off Georgia, stealing from his teammates, like pulling the Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, it happens. Every time someone wins, people just go and look for dirt on the person. That's just how the internet works in 2018. When you hear the stories and, you know, ESPN runs a big expose on his parents and family being like 2 miles away from the course at their home and like crying when he wins because they can't be there with him. That's kind of hard to hear. But there are always two sides to a story. In terms of the stealing stuff, I mean, that's just being a scumbag. It happens. People are that way. One of them in my top five, I'll allude to it here, is a person I consider to be a great scumbag. And they also got caught stealing / cheating. So it's one of those things. But when you're an athlete, you kind of just get away with it.
Yeah, and I chalk, like, he's an asshole. But yeah. I think the next level, what took him to being like everyone saying they hate him so much, is that his wife seems like an absolute lunatic.
That is true.
Any wife calls the shots.
That's the thing.
Any wife that forces you to basically cut off communication from your own family, the largest red flag you could have.
It's a tough look. It's a tough look overall. Jon Rahm, that dude's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I would be terrified to be paired up with him at any point.
Anyone who has chops like that has to be insane.
The scariest thing, I think, was on 16. I think that's the last par three. He hit the ball, didn't even look at it, and just slammed his club into the ground. And he put it like 20 feet away from the pin. Well, Ricky is in the bunker.
Those Spaniards, I mean, they're fiery.
They are fiery. And then, I have to mention, Bubba Watson put the ball into the bunker. When has that ever happened?
I was dying when I saw that. As much as I don't like Bubba, I felt like superior to him at one point in golf, because like, I personally have never done that.
Yeah, I'm a head case when it comes to golf, specifically on the green. I have never put the ball into the bunker before. I may have like five putt plenty of times, but I have never put the ball in the bunker.
That was the worst shank I've ever seen on a green. But yeah, because it was Bubba, I laughed so hard at that one. I want to make one note that the weird bodies had a lot of exposure this weekend in golf.
Yes.
Mark Leishman was a very underrated weird looking body. And he was in the lead for a long time over the weekend. He's got it's like a pear shape. Like he wears his pants too low and like the love handles kind of hang over the side. And it makes a weirdly shaped body.
So it was a bad day for man boobs pretty much in general. And every golfer has them. Spieth does a great job of covering it up with the zip up right over the top, no matter what the temperature is.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're out there and the winds are blowing right up against you and you're only wearing that single polo, you can just see nips everywhere and it's not a good look.
And Patrick Reed has the classic fat guy move of rolling up touching your sleeves
all the way up.
Yep. Classic fat guy move.
So Webb Simpson had the back-to-back Eagles. That's who it was.
Okay.
But that is Augusta, the greatest golf tournament around because of the tradition and the lore and the fact that there's only 2 minutes of commercials every hour and there are only three total sponsors.
Can I make one more note here?
Yeah.
When the Masters was ending, my girlfriend was over and as Patrick Reed is winning and they play like the Masters music, like playing it out and showing all the highlights. She just goes, wait, this is the music? I'm like, yeah, what about it? She's like, it's so peaceful. Like, I'm like, yeah, that's
Augusta.
It's the best tournaments in Aptu ever.
Yeah. Sunday, there were multiple points where I was just laying on the couch, like, I should just close my eyes. I'll be back before the 14th hole. Don't worry about it. Like, but I fought through and, got to watch a pretty fun round go on. One last thing about it, Sergio looked so awkward in the clubhouse, just sitting there, not saying any words, holding Patrick Reed's green jacket, listening to Jim Nance and whoever the new guy at Augusta is rattle off questions.
Yeah, Sergio didn't look like he wanted to be there, but, you know, he won. He's there.
He's done it. Finally. We will move on. Just before we started recording this, the NCAA FBI investigation. There was a, I'll put air quote, bomb that was dropped. Four schools were named explicitly in Adidas. Now, this is my understanding of it. Don't take it as gospel, but this is what how I read it. It said that Adidas or Company One via Jim Gatto was paying players to attend these four universities, and they were University of Louisville, the University of Miami, University of Kansas, and North Carolina State, all of which were sponsored by that company. Yeah, not a good look for any of these. It's never good to hear your name with the United States Attorney's Office seal stamped on the top of the letter. I don't know what to make of this, though. There's a lot of, apparently a lot of legal documents, legalese, legal jargon that you have to sort through. And anyone who listening out there, I hope you're sitting down. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what all this stuff means, but we're going to try and get to the bottom of it. Gut reaction, though. What do you think here?
I told you this before, just the foresight by Illinois' administration to get rid of the very, obviously now very corrupt Bill Self.
Yes, very, very prudent move.
Just to get out from underneath that administration. And also just that, what has NC State been doing to be a rung below the rest of these programs?
I mean, they did have Dennis Smith. He's good. They made the tournament a couple of years. It's just, they had the Martin twins too from Nevada.
They had the players. They haven't been able to put it together. And TJ Warren, I don't know if he's involved.
Yeah,
in this.
I mean, that's, you remember Cat Barber a couple of years ago? Let him on the Sweet 16 run. Great hair. They've had the players, like you said. It's just Mark Gottfried is not a good coach.
Fair.
I don't know what else to say. So yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm sure Kansas Twitter is very calm right now. No one's overreacting whatsoever.
Yeah, no one cares.
We will move on to the NBA. What do we have here, Pete?
So it comes down, it's basically the NBA's version of a play-in game is happening Wednesday night tonight. For those listening, it's between for the 8th seed in the Western Conference, Nuggets, Wolves. Both teams are going to be at relatively full health. Jimmy's back, and you know Tibbs is going to take full advantage of that and play him
44 minutes. Yep,
48. I doubt Jimmy's coming out of the game. But Gary Harris is back for the Nuggets. Paul Millsap is back and playing. I'm honestly kind of conflicted in who I want to come out on top in this game. I love the, you know, Timberwolves, whatever we want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to see the Nuggets in the playoffs. They like the combination of Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Jokic, who's just an absolute like incredible to watch the passes he makes, and Paul Millsap, and who can forget Kenneth Faried, a Brian Franklin favorite,
Newark, New Jersey.
Yes, sir. So I'm kind of on the fence here, but I think ultimately Wednesday night I'm going to end up rooting for the Wolves because, I mean, they're just absolutely tortured fan base. 14 seasons since their last playoff appearance, and I'd just love to see Jimmy playing against the Warriors.
It will be interesting to see this game. Derrick Rose, I've seen a couple different, I should say, unique Derrick Rose highlights from the past few weeks. I didn't even realize he was running again.
Yeah, he's good. He had the sprained ankle that he was out for about a week. Oh,
of course. Reggie cleared him.
Yeah, Reggie. Get the Reggie stamp of approval.
Okay. I'm also pulling for the Timberwolves. I just love to see Tibbs in the playoffs. Watch him fail in the playoffs and then wonder why the hell it doesn't work and then realize that his starters have logged 1,000 more minutes than every other team's starters cumulative up to this point, and that's including Jimmy Butler's injury time.
Yeah, and I always hesitate to criticize Tibbs because he's a defensive visionary for the NBA. He revolutionized the league when it comes to modern defenses, but he doesn't give Karl Anthony Towns nearly enough shots that he deserves on this team. I think he's third or fourth on the team in attempts. I think Jamal Crawford might have more attempts per per game than he does. So I really want to see Tibbs get Cat more involved in the playoffs, because I think Cat has the opportunity to take advantage of a few mismatches against the Warriors, even though I see the Warriors winning against the Wolves in five.
And on the other end of the spectrum, the Bulls are in seventh right now in terms of number one pick.
Yes, seventh for the standings that really count.
So we can't even tank right, is what I hear.
You know what? I would have liked four, maybe five, but like the fact that we had the young talent was competent enough, and Hoiberg brought together our young guys who weren't expected to win anything, got them where they were able to win as many games as they did. I guess it's a promising sign for the future.
How many lotto picks does Phoenix have? They are the worst team in the league, correct?
Yes. They have the top.
Didn't they have four last year?
They had two last year, I want to say.
Okay. Bender was a lotto pick.
And Marquise Chris.
Devin Booker was a lotto pick. Chris was a lotto pick.
Alex Len.
Josh Jackson was a lotto pick. Elfrid Payton was a lotto pick. Not to them, but he was still a lotto pick.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Ulis, was he a second rounder or was he in the lottery?
Second rounder.
Okay. That's a lot of talent to not be good whatsoever. Like, 20 and 61 is really bad.
Oh, they're really terrible. Oh, they're so bad.
All right. Well, that's what we have to look forward to. We'll talk more lottery and then NBA playoffs when everything is set. But
and then, yeah, then finally for the NBA, Dirk has just announced that he is returning for his 21st season next year. I don't know why. He's going to be closest thing that we've seen to a human statue playing in an NBA game.
Dirk's NBA career can drink now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Dirk's NBA career.
I mean, in Germany, he could have drank 3 years ago. So
correct. But this is America.
I need Dirk to take a $35 million salary like Kobe did at the end of his career, because I'm tired of him giving the Mavericks so many passes when they trot out these just absolutely horrendous lineups.
Mark Cuban could be the greatest businessman of all time for convincing Dirk to not take $35 million a year. It's absolutely incredible.
They're doing a Shark Tank negotiation. It's like, I'll give you 20% at this evaluation.
I'll give you 20% of my effort for $30 million. How about 15 for 25? Like, done.
He just completely undersold Dirk's evaluation. He's like, you know what? You have all the leverage here, Mark.
Unbelievable.
So yeah, Dirk just, you know, one of the greatest guys in the NBA, taking so little money to get absolutely shafted.
It's sad, but it's, you know what, I hope he gets his cash here. We will now kick it to our interview with Kevin Bartman of Go With The Flow, a Let Me Be Frank podcast, talking the NHL playoffs. We are now joined by Kevin Bartman, key member of Go With The Flow hockey podcast. Check it out if you haven't already. Great stuff with Dan Meritz and Nick Phillips, talking hockey every week. We have him on because the NHL playoffs kick off today, if you're listening. We've got three games coming up, and then the rest of the series get underway, including, I guess this is the perfect place to start, with the expansion Vegas team. They will be hosting a playoff game in their first year of existence. It is the nightcap of the three playoff games that will start off Wednesday. They host the LA Kings, kind of a team that has gone through a dynastic phase, dropped off a little bit, and seems to be hanging around in the playoff race more so than, I guess, the other dynastic team, the Blackhawks, which I think we'll get to as well. But Vegas is in. They won their division, and just kind of give us a recap of their season and then where you think they can go this year.
Yeah, so I mean, to say their season was a surprise is really an understatement, because the expansion draft is involved, because, you know, expansion teams are usually well below 500, not even close to sniffing the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But then you got Vegas here. George McPhee, he built them like it was the perfect group of people with the perfect coach and Gallant, who they're all just kind of like these outcasts. And the whole narrative of the year was, you know, oh, they're the expendable players. Nobody wants them. And then he whips all these guys into shape and they're, you know, top three team in hockey. So the regular season success was a surprise, but then now that they're going to the playoffs, you know, it's a whole different animal. So facing a team like the Kings in the first round, who's kind of the opposite of them in a way, because they've been a group, you know, playing well as a unit, well into the playoffs for 3 or 4 years now. And, you know, so it's going to be a good challenge for them, kind of a good litmus test to see how for real this team is and if their success is only limited to the regular season.
And going off that, do you think Las Vegas has the upper hand with their home ice advantage? And has there been any home extra home ice advantage throughout the season with that?
You know, in the regular season, I honestly think there's some truth to the Vegas flu type thing where, you know, these teams, they're going to Vegas for the first time in their career. And, you know, they're going to get into town night early, you know, go out, enjoy Vegas. And then everyone's just a little sluggish the next day. So I think that kind of has a little effect on their home record, because it's really, really something else. But I'm actually really excited to see their playoff atmosphere this year, because when you looked at Nashville last year, that was insane. And now you have lost. I think that could, you know, be two or three times greater than that. It's like, I'm honestly so excited to see it, because you're gonna have people from all over the world, gamblers, you know, these huge celebrities just going to hockey games, and it's gonna be something else. I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, and that's obviously, I would say, the biggest story of the Western Conference playoffs. I don't think you can really pick a bigger one. Obviously, Nashville's been fun to watch. You know, the Central Division just being so good is something else. But if you're going to pick a team out of the West, who are you looking at? I mean, we were talking before we got on air here, and the bottom half of that bracket with the Pacific Division, I think that's what it's called. Who knows anymore? But
yeah, Pacific.
They play such a, I don't want to say boring, because it's not terribly boring. It's just not a pretty style of hockey. Well, the Central Division is just studs up and down the entire way.
Yeah, the Pacific Division is all about, particularly the, you know, the San Jose's and the Anaheim. They're more of a grind it out. You're going to be seeing a lot of like 2-1, 3-2 games. Whereas in the Central, it's all super fast hockey, a lot of skill there. And, you know, you're going to be seeing them whiten up the scoreboard. So for all the gambling folks out there, I'd say just betting the over in any Central playoff game is a damn near lock, because there's so much scoring to be had.
Love it. I love those little tidbits. That's what we need here. Team, who are you taking out of the West?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is Nashville, just because I think they were pretty much wire to wire the best team in the West. And then just looking at their road to get to the conference final, or to the cup final for that matter, it's pretty damn easy. You know, they're going to run into, I think, Winnipeg in the second round, who's probably the next best team in the West. But, you know, they're just so reliant on heavy scoring. And when they run to a team like Nashville, who has the best defensive group in the league, you know, they're going to experience, like, they haven't seen anything like that except for Nashville in the regular season, but that group just steps it up like so much in the playoffs. Cause, and last year for that matter, they didn't even get that much offensive production out of their defense. Like PK Subban had like 2 goals or something. So he was kind of a non-factor. So if he comes in and becomes a factor this year, it's going to be, you know, something else. So I think just getting past Winnipeg, which I think is somewhat of a challenge, but it shouldn't be too much. I think it's kind of a cakewalk to the cup final.
For casual Hawks fans, or Hawks fans in general, what team do you suggest we should like latch on to for the playoff run here to become bandwagoners?
Well, me personally, I'm kind of jumping out east. I'm hopping on the Devils bandwagon, just because they're kind of like, they were a lottery team last year, bottom of the league. And then out of nowhere, Taylor Hall has this incredible season. He's, you know, an arguable Hart winner. And, you know, they just kind of weren't expected to be there. and they're going up against a juggernaut in the Lightning. So I think they're kind of an easy team to, you know, jump on the bandwagon and see how far they can go, even though in all likelihood they're going to be, you know, bounced in the first round in like 5 or 6 games. It's just going to be, yeah, it's going to be a good series, and they're a fun team to watch. Very fun team to watch.
Yeah, speaking of that division, Boston is another really fun team. They're young. They seem to have just shed the stereotypes they had over the last 3 years in the matter of 40 games this season. It came out of nowhere, and they've got a lot of young guys that love to score. They've got the Rat. They've got Rask and Net. There's so many interesting pieces on this team. Are we destined for a Boston-Tampa conference semifinal and then God knows who on the bottom half?
You know, that Boston-Toronto series on Go With The Flow that we recorded yesterday, this was the one series that, you know, none of us really had any idea of where it's going to go, because they're both really good in certain areas, and, you know, they have deficiencies in a lot of areas too. In Boston, you have a good mix of, you know, talented vets. Like you said, you got Marchand, who's in his prime right now. Chara, he's kind of had a bounce back year. And then you got young guys like McAvoy, who's pretty sick. Pasternak, Ryan Donato, who we saw in the Olympics. And then in Toronto, you just have this slew of really good young players. Like, obviously, Austin Matthews. And then they have their fair share of, you know, talented vets. So in a lot of ways, I feel like they kind of cancel out each other in certain areas. And that's why I'm just so unsure of where the series is going to go. I think, you know, if I have to go with my Boston, just because that experience, I feel like experience as a unit in the playoffs. And Boston has that, you know, on a different level than Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, I'm going to ask a really in-depth question for my level of hockey knowledge. Is it okay. The Caps here?
No.
Oh.
Simple no.
Ooh.
That's a tough one. Do they get out of the first round?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that. If I'm getting out of the first round, that's the one upset, I guess, I have in the playoffs. Just for one reason or another, I think Columbus is for it. They're both really underperforming teams this year. And a lot of people are still sleeping on Columbus. They got Panarin, who, you know, in all honesty, was kind of a dud for the Hawks in the playoffs when he was here. But, you know, he's kind of been lighting up this year. And then they have really good, young, talented defensemen. So I think they can just kind of, you know, grind wins against a underperforming Capitals team who, Holpe's not even in that either. They're starting Grubauer game one. So
right.
I think they're just kind of, you know, scrambling around, and that's, you know, really not going to play well to their advantage.
It would definitely help if Werenski didn't take a puck to the face again, I think, for Columbus, if, you know, they want to keep that depth going. But,
well, that's what we got in the playoffs. You got to think about that.
Yeah.
That's playoff hockey.
That is. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that he had broken bones and his eye was swollen shut, he probably would have been out there again to finish up the game.
Yeah, I mean, you said it.
I've got a couple more questions, but we'll go through the last series real quick. Pittsburgh, two-time defending champs. Will they three-peat, or is this the year of Philadelphia?
The Pittsburgh Penguins are going to three-peat. And
wow.
I really had to, you know.
And hockey guys complain about no parity in the NBA.
Oh, don't even. Okay. This is a joke.
I had to put that in there. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, that's fair. But, I go with the flow. Me and Nick were talking, and, like, Pittsburgh at the beginning of the year, we're saying, oh, like, this is, they're finally having their two-time Stanley Cup hangover. And then after about the first two and a half months, they were just on a different level. You know, Phil Kessel is having his career year. Malkin, you know, just brings his scoring up to another level. Crosby is Crosby. And then just they're surrounded by so much good depth at forward. And then they have Chris Letang back, who they didn't have for, I want to say, the entire playoffs last year. And
I think
Matt
so.
Murray's, yeah, if not most. And then you got Matt Murray, who's a stud. He's, you know, never had a bad game in the playoffs. So it's just really hard to imagine a team beating them in a 7-game series. It really is.
All right. And I don't know if Pete has any more questions, but this will be my last one. How many undisclosed injuries will we have this postseason? Over under set at 7.5.
I'm going to go with, well, undisclosed. So do you mean we don't find out till like they're eliminated or to,
yep.
To the playoffs? I'm going to go yep. over easily.
Okay.
Because like,
last year we had the Eric Carlson news with the fractured bones and things like that. We've had in the past, Marian Hossa has played through like broken wrist and God knows what. There are guys really playing, putting their hearts on the line, unlike the cramps that LeBron gets in the fourth quarter because the building's too hot.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty damn hot, Brian, all right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of like smaller injuries too. So I'm going to – like that's kind of a generous – absolutely smash the over on that one.
All right, Pete, any final questions?
I'm good.
All right, be sure to check out Go With The Flow. Drops weekly. They will be heavy into the NHL playoffs here. Great listen if you haven't yet. Hit the download button on iTunes. And Kevin, thanks for the time.
Yeah, boys, thanks for having me.
Definitely a lot to watch there in the hockey playoffs. So stay tuned and be sure to check out Go With The Flow on iTunes. Exactly how it sounds. Go With The Flow. It should say NHL podcast next to the title. Hit that subscribe button and you're good to go. So we'll start with our top five. Because of Patrick Reed's past and current life being dug up, we have decided to go with least favorite athletes. So, Pete, I will let you lead off.
All right. This list was completely all over the place. It was a mix of personal vendettas from my own playing experience and professional athletes against my teams. But number five, Carlos Boozer.
Ooh.
I grew to enjoy booze, but I did.
Damn right you did.
I absolutely grew to like him, especially with how much he...
I ain't talking about that. You grew to like booze.
Ah, yes.
I hope someone was laughing earlier.
The how much he went against LeBron, challenged him in the Heat series, but just how much he got paid. And it was just a reminder that how much we whiffed in that free agency season.
Yep. Get that shit, Joe.
Yeah, but I grew to love him from that. But, you know, and the hair, that was a little off-putting.
People forget slash didn't know that we almost bought bowl season tickets that off-season.
We were so close.
Assuming or hoping that they would land someone of note, and it never happened.
Nothing. Number four, this kid who used to call me overrated in our high school YMCA league. There was a Facebook group that we had for our YMCA league that one of the kids kept like player rankings, and one week I snuck into the top 10, and so this kid was pissed off about it and then just kept yelling it during our game the next week, and I haven't forgotten till this day.
Good. I like the vendetta.
Yeah. Number three, Sean May, because that fat piece of shit
26 and 24.
Yeah, beat U of I, and he's still fat. Nothing else to say about him. Two, Tyrus Thomas.
Oh, man.
I had such high hopes for this man, and it was just a constant reminder of who we could have had in LaMarcus Aldridge. I was so enthralled how high he could jump, but then after about a year, I realized that was all he could do. So,
yeah.
Shout out to Tyrus. And then number one, this was the most irrational hatred I ever had. I've gotten over it since then, but Frank Thomas.
Oh,
I can pinpoint the moment when I realized I decided I didn't want to like Frank Thomas as a child. I was very young, and I heard my aunt complaining about Frank Thomas, saying that he's always injured and like he literally never plays. And she called him the big skirt instead of the big hurt. It's a huge burn.
Huge.
I was so inspired by this that I put that in my AIM profile. my friends still make fun of me for it.
Oh my god!
To this day. So yeah, I as a child, I just I liked to hate Frank Thomas, but I like him now.
Yeah, too little, too late. I'm sure Frank's listening right now. And Frank, I was very indifferent on you your entire career. So just remember who said they didn't like you. My five, number five is a little bit of an homage to Sam Norland, our step-in host last week. Thank you for doing a great job. But JP Makura, I'm so happy I don't have to deal with watching him anymore. Of the 7 years I paid attention to Seton Hall basketball, JP has been around for four of them. If you're a math person, that's over 50%. That's way too long. And it'll be really nice to not have to see his crooked chin anymore.
That was uncalled for, Brian.
Maybe. Maybe. Number four is Yadi. I hate Yadier Molina. I cannot stand that guy. And even worse is the Cardinal fans that love to back him up till to the death, no matter what he does. He could stab a pregnant woman and they would still be like, well, did you hear what she said to him? It's unbelievable that a woman could talk like this and not get it, you know, in trouble for it. It's
she
like,
didn't give him the frame.
Come on. Yep. It's truly astounding what the Cardinals fans will back this man up for.
What's your opinion on the other two Molina brothers?
Indifferent. Okay. Completely indifferent. Number three.
Yadi confirmed least favorite Molina. Continue.
Yes. Yes. Are there four Molina brothers?
I think Benji, Jose, and Yadi are.
Okay. Number three is Phil Mickelson. I alluded to him earlier. Not a good day for him because he played shit golf, but also because the wind blew up against his giant man boobs and they showed pretty good.
Those are like Phil, 32 C's. Those are large.
Phil got caught with some insider trading earlier last year, I think. He is a cheater. He is a scumbag. I do not like the man one bit. And I genuinely relish in every time he struggles or comes so close and fails.
I have a really irrational affinity for Phil because just for the fact that he's also a lefty. Yep. And his nickname is literally Lefty. So
people are creative.
Yeah. So I still associate with myself with Phil.
Pete, I'm going to give you a quick trigger warning for number two here. So just prep yourself. It's Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, I thought it was going to be LeBron. Okay.
No. I hate Aaron Rodgers. Him and his dainty collarbone can just fuck off. I'm so sick of this guy. The worst was the discount double check commercials followed by the belt thing that he would do when he ran a bootleg and didn't come anywhere near anyone. Like, why don't you lower your shoulder into a guy and act like a real fucking football player instead of just scampering to the corner away from all the giant people that it's their job to hit you and you know, do a belt move to show off. I hate Aaron Rodgers. Every time he gets hurt or appears to be injured or when they talk about, wow, look how tough this guy is, I get irrationally angry.
The haters and losers, of which there are many, Brian.
That's fine. I will be lumped into them because I am a 100% hater of Aaron Rodgers.
Fair.
And number one, this might actually be a trigger warning as well, but Carmelo Anthony, the cancer himself. He is the single worst thing to happen to teams in the history of the world. I cannot think of anything worse. Like, you could put Hitler on a basketball team, and I think they'd have better cohesion than Carmelo Anthony does with his teammates.
Hitler would at least contribute to like the artistic appeal of like the teams like jerseys and
it would be pretty sports. Basketball. That's what they would play. He's a great distributor. He rallies the troops.
Yeah, Brian, I'm agreeing with you now. Like I've been his defender in the past, but he's just indefensible at this point.
He is the definition of a net negative. Like if you want to look at a guy that doesn't contribute in any way and takes away from the team, Carmelo Anthony is prime example number one. Cannot stand that guy. Anyone talking about him being a great basketball player should seriously consider like taking an IQ test.
He's a great scorer, Brian.
Even then, he's a volume shooter. If he's a great scorer, then Jamal Crawford's a great scorer.
Jamal Crawford is a great scorer.
No, don't give me that.
He's one of the greatest bench scorers of all time.
Bench scorer.
Yeah, and Michael Jordan was a volume shooter.
Oh my God, yeah, but he made his shots.
They shot like essentially the same percentages.
I got to see the numbers.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm just saying that's my only defense is there. He had an elite skill, but outside of that, there was, you know, not much else.
Now you admit it. If we go back many episodes ago, there are arguments between you and I, and even Hayes, talking about how bad Melo is, and you're talking about how he has some redeemable characteristics.
Maybe because you guys swing so hard negative on this topic that I feel so appalled that like
he's a traffic cone on defense.
Now he is, but at the beginning of this argument, he was not.
No. As you can tell, it gets a little heated with these. So let us know your five or even one player that you despise with all your heart. There are tons of guys out there that people either rationally or irrationally dislike. Let us know yours. I'm amazed Gennaro Pargo didn't make your list.
Oh, God damn it. Yeah.
Fuck honorable mention.
Yeah, Gennaro Pargo, only guy I went to a Bulls Clippers game in 2001. I've confirmed that it's 2001 because I checked the autographs to the roster that I got signed, and it matches up perfectly. I got about 8 or 9 signatures from the Clippers, and Gennaro Pargo was the only person I talked to that told me, yeah, I'll get you when I come back. Never came back.
So there it is, folks. There's a real rational hatred for someone, unlike
that's,
pretty
that
much
sparked
all
a real
time.
Fire in me today when I heard that name.
Yeah. We'll move on to our stats. I'll go first. I just have one, and it's about Giancarlo Stanton. There are plenty that have come out about him. I'm just going to cherry pick that he had 18 strikeouts and 36 at-bats this year.
That
he's
is
on my, he's on my fantasy team.
I truly want the Yankees fans to experience what I had to experience with Adam Dunn.
No, that's never going to happen. Stan's at least going to hit like 50 homers still.
You go through like the 5 stages of grief. And like
that's
you,
true.
It gets to be laughable at a certain point, like as a joke. Like the at-bats are a joke.
The 5 stages of bad free agent signings.
It's just like let's see if he makes contact this time. Let's like, oh, it was entertaining. Like it was pure entertainment at the end of the day. But good Lord,
that's a great blog idea. I'm writing it down. That is the 5 stages of bad free agent signing.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, that's my stat. What do you have?
All right, I have two. I mentioned the T-Wolves playoff drought earlier. Their 14-year playoff drought is significantly longer than the actual lifespan of a literal timber wolf.
Oh, my God.
According to Wikipedia, the average lifespan of an Eastern wolf, or like a wolf in general, is 5 to 6 years, the longest being 15. So
that's really short.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear that, too.
Wow.
So the more you know. Second one here, you'll appreciate this one. It's an anti-LeBron. LeBron James has the worst free throw percentage in the last 10 seconds of a one possession game of like this season out of any player over the past 20 years. He's shooting 47% from the line.
Such a cherry pick stat.
I'm saying, but it's a cherry pick stat that demonstrates like close.
Yeah, he's not game, clutch.
Yeah, game like on the line. And it's weird also because
Kobe was 90%.
It's also weird because his free throw percentage overall has gone up. So he's just got the yips right now.
I will tell you this much. I'm starting to swing a little bit in LeBron's favor.
Yes.
Let me put a caveat in there. In acknowledging that he is one of the two greatest players to ever play the game. And just, you know, actually enjoy watching him play. Like, I can get mad about other stuff and say that I don't want him taking the last shot in the game. That's fine. But to completely rid this man of his talent, which is clearly there and has seemingly gotten better over the years, is ridiculous. So I'm slightly swinging in the way of LeBron is one of the greatest players to ever play, and just acknowledging that and enjoying it while I can watch it.
Perfect. One thing, I'll go the other way just to say, as a LeBron lover, I'll do one mark against him. I really hate how he posts Instagrams of like big dunks or big plays he makes the night after a loss.
Mm.
Whenever he like the nights like the poster on Nurkic, the dunk against the Sixers. Both games they lost, but he only wanted to post a dunk after the game.
not a team player. Never would have seen MJ posting that on Instagram.
I can't imagine what a Michael Jordan Instagram account would have looked like.
Dennis Rodman. Are you kidding me?
I feel like he would have been like one of the
suspended.
I feel like Dennis would have turned into one of those artsy photographers on Instagram.
Just like looking
with weird naked body art where like he just convinces with like, let's just do a photo shoot.
Just back to the basket, looking straight ahead, like the past is the past, nothing but buckets in my future or something.
Yeah, wearing the strangest clothes you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Okay, those are my two.
All right, we'll move on to our tweets. I've got a pair, and one of them is from the formerly famous UMBC Twitter account. Tell us if you've heard this one before. UMBC pulls off the stunning upset against the number one team in the country. The Retrievers upset number one Albany 11-7 to defeat a top-ranked team for the first time since 1998 on the lacrosse field. So within the span of a month, UMBC basketball and lacrosse has upset the number one team in the country.
God bless.
That's probably never happened before. You want to cherry pick a stat? That's probably never happened.
Lacrosse, sport of the future.
Sport of the future. And my other one is the Nebraska quarterback coach, Mario Verduzco, definitely butchered his last name, doesn't believe in days of the week. When asked why, he said, quote, every day is game day.
I can't argue with that logic.
When every day is game day, the record counts.
Coach, we're going to have a meeting on Tuesday. What day?
What day?
On the second game day this week, 11:30, all right?
Thank you. When is kickoff?
I only have one. Comes from Richie Incognito, who has retired. But before that, I don't know, he tweeted at his agency and just said, you were fired. Wish you guys nothing but the best moving forward. Thank you all for help and guidance along the way. It's time for me to go in a new direction. Peace sign emoji. He just fired.
I don't know if that's legally binding, though. Can you fire someone via Twitter? Trump hasn't done it yet. I don't think you can.
Yeah, this is true. I don't know. I mean, I guess he's pushing the limits here. But the guy, he fires his agency, then promptly retires. So
good on you.
Have a nice retirement. And also, Richie claimed he just wants to be in the Hall of Fame, which I don't think he's anywhere close to being in the Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think so either. I think he's a good O-lineman, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer in any way, shape, or form.
Four-time Pro Bowler, good player. Not great.
Yeah. Locker room guy, character guy, mm-hmm. outside of the bullying and maybe racial things he did in Miami.
Slightly problematic.
Yep. As we do every week, we will close up with what we are looking forward to this weekend. Pete, what's going on for you?
I'm going to say playing a round of golf. I'm hoping the weather holds up this weekend. I have the itch after watching the Masters.
Hold the twigs out, eh?
Yeah. So we'll see. I really doubt I end up. I'm probably going to send in after 9.
There it is. Yeah, I am. It's the last week of the AHL regular season. Your Chicago Wolves are playoff bound. How about this stat that no one wants to hear? 19 of the 24 years the Wolves have been in existence, they've made the playoffs.
That's pure excellence from a Chicago franchise.
Yep. If we want to talk about good Chicago teams, specifically hockey, there it is. But yeah, last week of the regular season, the division will be decided, and then it's playoff time next week. My life will be coming back to me very soon. I can see the end of the tunnel. It has been a dark, dark and gloomy couple months with just work. And we're almost out the other side and ready for shorts and baseball season. As always, check us out. LetMeBeFrankBlog.com on iTunes. Let Me Be Frank Podcast. Follow us Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at LMBF Sports. Pete, any final words?
Support your local AHL team and buy Chicago Wolves tickets from your very own Brian Franklin.
There it is. Have a good week. Drinking.
in a German beer with a Cuban cigar in the middle of Paris with a Dominican bar. Great head on her shoulder, she probably studied abroad. She transferred to Harvard from King's College in March. She says that I'm her favorite cause she admires the art. Michelangelo with the flow, Picasso with the bar. She's well put together like a piece by Gershwin. Renaissance style, tonight is pitch perfect. So smile and pack your bags real good, baby, cause you'll be gone for a while. Wow, wow.